And just so you know, in Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman's WWE, we have nothing for you. But I do have something for Stephanie. You know, I knew you wouldn't hit me because I can outthink you every single time. I know everything you're gonna do long before you do it. You met your match in me. The cerebral assassin, I'm smarter than you. I see everything you're gonna do from a mile away.
See that coming?
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live.
It's Thursday evening, Smack Talk Radio Live, back on the air. I'm Corey Callahan, sitting in a dinghy boat floating down the Fraser River alongside James McDonald.
And he just threw my life jacket over the side.
Fraser River's flooding here in British Columbia, James. Can you believe it?
It's kind of crazy what's going on.
I was actually at the edge of it this morning when we were doing our news broadcast with Global News, and it is crazy. An entire campground submerged underwater.
Jeez.
Insane. Regardless, we're not here to talk about flooding rivers, although I would like to talk about dinghy boats. But no, we're going to talk about professional wrestling. This is Smack Talk Radio Live. And James, an interesting announcement this week coming from us because, as you may have noticed, Monday we did not do a show that we like to call SRL on a Monday night, and we didn't do one last week either. Now, there is a reason for it, and what is that reason for, James?
Well, I think we're just preparing ourselves with the announcement that Monday Night Raw is going to be going 3 hours. It's just not feasible for you and I to watch a three-hour Raw and then come into the studio and pump out a quality show. And then do it all over again the next week.
The truth of the matter is when you and I watch Monday Night Raw before we do our SRL on a Monday Night show, you and I are writing like madmen.
Just crazy.
As we watch the show.
Yes,
you know, we're typing away, trying to take notes, and I already feel like I'm not really enjoying the viewing experience by doing that. You add an extra hour to that, I think I might start hating wrestling if I do that.
It's just hard to really process what's going on because as you're typing at the same time, I mean, you're looking at your computer, looking at the TV at the same time, and you know, you're right. You're not getting that full enjoyment of the show that you should be getting.
So in protest of the WWE going to 3 hours, unfortunately for the time being, we are going to have to scrap SRL on a Monday night. Now this brings us to our Thursday show that we call Smack Talk Radio Live. And you and I have made a little bit of a personal decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we plan to just streamline our Thursday show just a little bit.
Yeah.
And just scale it back. And just, our lives are hectic, James. Let's be realistic here. And we don't have the time each and every week at this point
right.
to commit to a full pre-produced episode that we've been pumping out. So we need to scale it back a little bit so we can continue to bring consistent
yes.
episodes. The quality is still going to be there.
Absolutely.
The content is still going to be there. But the top five is going to have to take a back seat for a little while.
Yep.
Other segments like that. We're still going to do interviews, though. And we have an excellent interview lined up tonight. We are speaking with Mike Scully, one of the co-producers of Kayfabe the Movie.
And if you guys haven't seen this Kayfabe movie, I highly recommend it. It's one of the funniest films I've seen in a long time, and we're going to talk a lot about it later on tonight.
And we're going to get to that a little later. First, we're going to talk WWE in our Tale of the Tape. But actually, before that, let me remind everyone, www.smacktalkradiolive.com. facebook.com/smacktalkradio, or if you're on Twitter, at SRL Radio. And if you have any comments about professional wrestling, the week it was with Monday Night Raw, where can they send their emails to, James?
That email address is onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. Send us those emails, your thoughts, opinions, your views, and who knows, there might be some great stuff coming your way.
And what's funny, James, is I actually forgot about another segment that we will continue to do, and that's this segment right here, the Post-to-Post Report. Let's get you caught up.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the Post-to-Post Report.
You can't compromise the Post-to-Post Report.
Gotta have that segment.
For sure, that one will continue. Now, James, we start the Post-to-Post Report this week with JBL, yes, John Bradshaw Layfield, as he has begun an excellent journey to raise money for charity, raising money for kids in Bermuda. Now, JBL, he'll climb 7 mountain peaks, the highest peaks on 7 different continents.
Wow.
Taking place over a 2-year period, 100% of the proceeds will go to charity, and JBL himself is covering all the expenses for the climbs.
What a guy.
No kidding. As we speak, JBL is currently climbing Mount Elbrus, located in Russia, which is the highest mountain. If successful, JBL will attempt Mount Kilimanjaro, the highest mountain in Africa, in September. Want to donate or learn more? Check out 7summitsforkids.com.
Corey, you forgot to mention that he's going to be plugging a WWE logoed flag on the top of every mountain.
Oh, is he? I didn't hear about that.
No, he's gonna be planting a WWE flag on the top of every mountain when he reaches the zenith.
Interesting.
Yeah. TNA has taken legal action against Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner following weeks of disparaging remarks, I guess we could say, online about the organization, Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff, among others. Now, filing a verified complaint in Nashville Chancery Court Monday, TNA asked for an injunction to stop the negative tweets Steiner has posted on Twitter recently. TNA states that Steiner's remarks breaches a contract that he signed back in December 2010, which states he is forbidden from making public statements, including messages online, concerning TNA or any of its employees without prior approval from the company first. No hearing on the matter has been set as TNA has yet to file an order for the injunction. It was also disclosed in the filing that Steiner was paid $2,500 per pay-per-view performance during his time with TNA.
My response to that is, Scott who?
My response to that is, put Steiner Mania into YouTube, you're going to be in for a great laugh.
Just go away already. That's the realistic truth. Former WWE wrestler Ken Doan, remember him?
Yep.
Part of the Spirit Squad.
Yep.
Eventually repackaged as Kenny Dykstra. Well, Doan has been quite outspoken recently, taking to various media outlets, particularly when it comes to the topic of John Cena. Now, speaking with SESScoops.com this week, in his own words, Doan reveals that he was once dating Mickie James, and after using a computer that she had just finished using, Doan discovered that James and Cena were secretly seeing each other. This is all while Cena was secretly seeing another girl, all while Cena had a girlfriend at home who he was planning to marry.
What?
Life on the road, I tell you.
Holy.
Now, when it all came to light, Doan apparently was moved to SmackDown, along with Cena's other mistress, held off joint brand pay-per-views, and eventually released.
Oh,
coincidence? Just one of the many crazy John Cena stories Doan talks about in this interview, claiming that the golden boy of the WWE isn't so golden. Interesting read for sure.
So do we start calling him Tiger Cena now?
I think that's a pretty good comparison.
You know that WWE is going to be brushing any mention of this under the rug quick as possible.
What's funny is TMZ reported this week as well that apparently John Cena's wife, who they've just split up and they are going to be getting a divorce, TMZ was reporting that she will be looking for proof that John Cena has cheated on her in their marriage. And if that is true, this could put the prenup that these two have in place in jeopardy.
Oh, this is just going to get better and better, I have a feeling.
Listen, John, you can follow Hulk Hogan in the ring, but don't follow him outside the ring.
Former TNA star Amazing Red had a tryout match before Sunday's WWE No Way Out pay-per-view. Sources believe that Red will be hired for WWE's All Cruiserweight project that is currently in development.
Eve Torres has been announced as a cast member for the upcoming NBC reality series Stars Earn Stripes. Now, this is produced by Mark Burnett, Dick Wolf, and David Hurwitz, three big producers. Eve will join other celebrity contestants as they take on challenges related to America's Armed Forces. Layla Ali, Dean Cain, Nick Lachey, and Sarah Palin's husband, Todd Palin, are among others joining Eve in this reality competition. The series begins with a 2-hour premiere on Monday, August 13th.
Mark Burnett, he's the one that did Survivor, right?
Also does Celebrity Apprentice.
Oh,
he's a big name.
Big name. Okay, Mike Tyson has been confirmed as a playable character for THQ's upcoming release of the WWE 13 video game. The baddest man on the planet is announced as making his in-ring return, you know, albeit virtually, when the game hits shelves on October 30th of this year.
THQ is sure grasping at straws. They actually release, they issue a press release announcing that Tyson is going to be in this video game. Interesting.
Announcing it as his in-ring return, nonetheless.
I know.
Jeez.
And finally, the WWE No Way Out pre-show match with David Otunga versus Brodus Clay. This is on YouTube before the pay-per-view started.
Oh, I watched that, and that was a terrible match, but continue, sorry.
It peaked, though, at 43,855 viewers on YouTube.
Wow.
Now, did you like that concept when you watched it?
I do. I like the pre-show concept, but give me something worth watching. That's my only beef, right?
In comparison, the first time they did this, which was at Over the Limit, that pre-show match with Kane versus Zack Ryder, it peaked at 44,049 viewers, so pretty much virtually the same numbers. Still, though, 44,000.
You know what?
You got some viewers.
That number is going to go up as more people start catching on to the pre-show concept, I
think.
And
again, you got to have a match with substance, and it'll really go up.
Don't give me David Otunga and Brodus Clay. It's terrible.
WWE stock price this week, it closed at $7.60 a share Thursday.
Ooh.
The stock actually hit a 52-week low of $7.44 a share this past Monday. Which was funny, because I was actually debating buying it that day when I saw that.
Jeez, at that price, it's almost worth considering.
It's worth considering, but you just don't know. It's such a volatile stock these days. You just can't figure it out.
You're no kidding. It could go either way. I mean, you're kicking yourself if it goes down to like $5 or something. But
in terms of ratings for Monday Night Raw this week, the June 18th Monday Night Raw scored a 3.42 rating, the highest since a 3.43 rating the night after WrestleMania 28. It was essentially even with the regular 2 hours of last week's 3-hour Raw. Now, in terms of viewers, Raw averaged 4.96 million viewers with an average of 4.85 in the first, and then increasing to an average of 5.7 million in the second hour.
Jeez, 3.43 rating. That's really, really good.
Oh, and I just could not be more unhappy with the good rating. And I'm going to get to that in our Tale of the Tape, which is happening right about now, because the post-to-post report, it about wraps it up for this week.
That was it.
What do you think?
I think they're caught up on the business of the business.
Very well said. All right, James, let's talk about it. Wrestling, the week it was, Monday Night Raw.
Well, I gotta tell you, Monday Night Raw, for 2 weeks now in a row, they have managed to actually offend me. 2 weeks in a row now. Last week, it was Vince McMahon doing his rather classless imitation of Jim Ross. Mm-hmm. And this week, it was Michael Cole essentially destroying the poignant segment with Cyndi Lauper that was meant to be somewhat of a tribute to Captain Lou Albano. It's just, don't even get me started on Michael Cole.
You're offended. I was going to say the fans of Long Island need to be offended. The fact they didn't even see Zack Ryder on Monday Night Raw. Granted, he worked a dark match, but still, you don't even see the hometown boy.
He worked a match for Superstars.
Brutal.
Superstars. Come on. Give the guy some time on the live show.
Does that go to show where Zack Ryder sits right now on the roster?
Yeah, to me, it just says that they don't have any confidence in him whatsoever.
And I don't blame him. I don't find him that good.
Well, I don't know.
I just find it insulting that you have this guy who has a YouTube show, you know, Long Island Ice Z, I think it's called. You have this, he makes no bones about it that he's from that area. He's apparently one of the guys on the active roster, and you don't even see him.
You know what? I think, to me personally, this is Vince going, you know what? I can still bury somebody who's made themselves popular. You kind of get what I'm trying to say?
Yes. Oh yeah,
this just reeks of Vince McMahon saying, "You know, screw what you guys want. I'm the one with all the power."
Ego getting in the way. Regardless, though, one of the big topics of Monday Night Raw would be the aftermath of No Way Out that just happened this past Sunday. And that would be that John Laurinaitis is apparently fired. Apparently. I use that term, apparently, because here's what I don't understand. You have John Cena versus, or sorry, John Laurinaitis loses at No Way Out. He's supposed to be fired. The next night on Monday Night Raw, he walks out and says, well, before I got fired, I made one more match. And that was,
what was with that?
And that was John Cena versus Big Show Otunga, you know, and Big Show Otunga.
And himself.
And himself.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, so you go and book a match, you go and book a main event match with John Cena, the guy who you have, you're confident that it's you're going to beat him at the pay-per-view.
Completely flawed logic.
It's like you're accepting that you're going to lose at No Way Out, but before you lose at No Way Out, you're going to go and make one more match with the guy you're facing at No Way Out in the main event of Monday Night Raw. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's completely flawed logic. And that's, and honestly, this is the biggest, and I mean, we could go into a whole show about this, but this is the biggest problem that WWE has right now. And it's why TNA is starting to gain ground on them. It's just because there's no logic to their creative side.
So John Laurinaitis comes out and makes a main event match on Raw. Do you feel like this is the last we've seen of John Laurinaitis?
No, I don't feel this is the last we've seen in him whatsoever. They've invested so much into Laurinaitis up to this point that to me it seems really shocking that they just all of a sudden write him off of TV.
Do you think it's like at all possible that they don't like what they see and they decided that we're going to reverse course here and we're going to get rid of him altogether?
No, I think at this point, I think they're kind of getting Laurinaitis out of that role just so they can maybe bring back some old faces leading up to the big 1,000th episode happening in mid-July. That's kind of what I personally think.
I find it interesting that they actually have removed him as the head of talent relations on their corporate website. And they are planning to take him off television. I'm beginning to wonder if we're just, if we're days away from seeing, you know, John Laurinaitis removed from the WWE altogether, but even backstage.
But you know what? Here's the weird thing, Corey. He's booked for house shows in like August and September and stuff.
In what role, though?
As a performer.
Hmm.
So it's kind of odd to me. So that alone makes me think that at some point we are going to see Laurinaitis make a return in some fashion.
If you're going to get rid of him, get rid of him. Don't have him loiter around the show.
Yeah, no, I know. Because
logic, because that just screams that there will be no logic in their storylines. I can just see it coming. We're going to have weeks of not knowing what role John Laurinaitis is playing. Maybe he just becomes a valet, a manager to Big Show at this point. I mean, it's an option as well. I just feel like there's going to be this sense of confusion. And with that sense of confusion, there is going to be illogical writing. And that just produces a bad product. You know what I mean?
No, I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, we've been talking about this for, I mean, multiple episodes on this show now, and it's you know, I don't know what they're gonna do.
They kind of sent Laurinaitis packing by having John Cena give him three attitude adjustments at the end of Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
The question begs: are you happy to see Johnny gone?
Personally, no. I like Laurinaitis in the role that he was in because he gives that. He's that antagonist that you need to really get things rolling. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the number one rule of storytelling, I guess, in general, is your protagonist is only as good as your antagonist, right? Like, you only care about your good guy or whatever as much as you care about your villain, right?
Yeah.
Well, they've invested so much into Laurinaitis, you could really build guys off of feuding with him. Do you kind of get what I'm trying to say here?
Has it not run its course, though? Have we? I mean, we've seen Laurinaitis for over a year now. I mean, has it not? Has he not run his course in terms of being that antagonist?
No, I think they could. I think they could get lots more out of John Laurinaitis in that role.
Let me ask you this: do we even need a general manager on Monday Night Raw anymore?
I think so because that general manager position really gives them the opportunity to say, you know, bring in an old face that you haven't seen in a while, or maybe bring in a celebrity that's hot at the time to kind of give each other a shine or whatever so they can plug their product, right? It's kind of an excuse to... Do you get what I'm saying?
I personally hate this idea of bringing in a open door or a revolving door general manager role. I don't want to see new managers each and every week because there's no stability. And and again, that leads to illogical writing. And I don't like that. I like having a permanent stable of someone in charge. That being said, do I think that Monday Night Raw needs a general manager at this point in time? No, I don't. And the reason why is because let's just change it up for once. Let's just see what happens with no one in charge. I think since, what, the early 90s, we've had someone in charge running the show. Can we not just go without having that aspect of Monday Night Raw?
And then, so what do you, how do you have the matches set up? You have the board of directors set them up, or do you have like a...
I haven't even really thought about
have
that.
Have one of the guys come out and maybe challenge somebody else?
I haven't
call
really,
somebody out, or what?
Yeah, why not? Like, let's get creative. Like, I haven't thought about it
myself
personally.
No, I'm totally with you. I'm all for creative, buddy.
Yeah, like, I haven't really thought about how you would fill that void, but let's just mix it up.
Because you gotta have exposition somehow. You gotta have... Some, I mean, that's a big role of the general manager is exposition for the show, right? He sets up the matches, which make things happen, essentially, right?
But the role of general manager is also a cheap way to book matches.
Well, again, you have to have that form of exposition,
though. Indie shows, indie wrestling feds, they all operate without someone in charge like that.
Most indie feds, they have a quote-unquote owner that sets things up.
Not all of them.
A great majority of them, yes,
but... I'm not going
to
say all of them.
You need to have...
It is out there.
You do need to have some sort of authority in place to make something like a wrestling promotion work. You just can't have...
I'd like to see...
You just can't have chaos and guys running around attacking each other backstage and stuff.
Even if it just... We tried it for a month. I'd like to just see what we could come up with. That's really all I'm getting at. Let's just try and be creative. Try something new. Try something fresh. I feel like it's always just been the battle of power with the general manager. And that's... I don't know. I'm into trying something new at this point because I'm not liking what I see. So, I don't know. John Laurinaitis, am I happy to see him go? No, but I don't want to see him loitering around in another role either.
No, I hear you. I hear you.
What about the idea that they're going to have this revolving door of general managers, past Raw general managers coming back each and every week for the next little while? What do you think of that?
I think it could be interesting. I'd like to see them maybe bring back some of the celebrities that they had, like, well, the good ones, maybe like Bob Barker and Shaq and stuff. That'd be kind of cool to see them.
Now, you actually want a celebrity to come and be the guy, the authority figure on Monday Night Raw?
If they're into the show and they add to it, you know, like Hasselhoff did, or like I said, like Barker did, or like Shaq did, right? Then yeah, absolutely, get one of those guys come back, and because they enhance the show personally, I thought so.
But does that also not just scream that wrestling is? I don't want to use the word. Fake, but like you have this guy coming who shows up for one night and he has the power to make any match he wants. Like, that bothers me.
Well, you know, most people know it's garbage anyways, but yeah.
You know who I'd like to see come back and
who
be the Raw?
Who?
Eric Bischoff.
That would be...
And I'd like to see him come back and he could run the show for a while and eventually he could have this power struggle with Vince or whoever he wants again and we can do this again. But I just feel like there needs to be a real serious authoritative figure that role.
You know what? Here's what I think. I think we're going to see on the 1,000th episode of Raw, we're going to see the anonymous Raw general manager come back, and it's going to be revealed to be Eric Bischoff.
Interesting. Well, it can't be Eric Bischoff. He's involved with TNA.
Well, that's not going to happen. They brought Ric Flair over. Why can't they bring Bischoff over? Come on.
Well, it's not going to happen.
No, I know it's not going to happen.
But Ric Flair is a possibility.
To have Ric Flair?
He got released by TNA. He's no longer involved with TNA.
No, yeah, I heard about that.
So he is an option.
That's interesting.
What are some of the other past Raw general managers that you can remember that are going to be coming back to possibly host Monday Night Raw?
Well, he wasn't a Raw general manager, but Paul Heyman would be awesome to come back and be a general manager. And I think it could progress his program with Triple H if he came back and was general manager.
There's always this possibility that the match between Lesnar and Hunter at SummerSlam could be for control of Monday Night Raw. And if Lesnar wins, Paul Heyman would assume control of Monday Night Raw. That's not a bad idea.
That's kind of a cool idea. I like that.
I could see that.
Yeah, that would be good.
And then you'd have...
As long as there's some sort of stipulation to their match, right? We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, and for once, you would actually have, you know, Triple H or Vince McMahon answering to someone higher than them. I don't think we've ever seen that before.
Speaking of Vince McMahon, he's been making... What did you think of his return to TV, was it 2 weeks ago?
Well, I absolutely hated it.
Did you?
I did not like how Vince McMahon came back. I could not stand his over-the-top, goofy...
His whole... To me, his whole appearance on Raw just seemed like a big ego trip. Do you know what I mean?
Well, he could have come back in one of two ways. He could have came back the way he did, which was comedic, nonchalant, non-serious. Or he could have come back as like this very serious businessman who knew that the company was in trouble, and he's coming back to make changes and to bring seriousness back into the company and to bring legitimacy back into the product. He could have come back either one of those ways. He chose the comedic route.
He chose John Cena style.
And I think that was a mistake.
It was... like I said, the whole thing just reeked of Vince McMahon's ego, essentially. And,
oh, yeah.
And the whole sec... Don't even get me started on this whole thing with the Bell's palsy and Jim Ross, that terrible imitation that he did with Hornswoggle. Like,
it blows my...
Why would you do that with your wife trying to get into politics and you're heavily involved in an anti-bullying campaign with this Be a Star program? And then you go and do something like that?
I just think Vince McMahon forgets those things sometimes. And he just, in his head, he thinks of something funny while he's at the arena.
I think he just has this idea in his head that he can do whatever the heck he wants.
McMahon is one of those interesting guys where you could argue that as much as he helps the product in today's day and age, he's also hurting the
product.
He's
starting to take away. As much as he helped it and he built it up in the past, it just, yeah, he seems like he's... I don't know. He seems like he's detracting from it now.
Yeah, I know. It's tough to tough to really gauge where his head is at, mm-hmm. because he's doing these crazy things. And
yeah.
And it's total ego. That's all it is. You know it damn well that he wants to make sure everyone knows that he's the man in charge, and what he wants to do, he will do. So I thought it was interesting, though, that we didn't see him at all on Monday Night Raw this week. He shows up last week, but he doesn't come back this week.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of thought we were going to see a little bit more Vince on TV, especially with John Laurinaitis being fired, mm-hmm. right?
Well, it's no secret. You and I have both been told before that Vince McMahon does not like to be on TV. He hates being on TV. And I think that move for him to come back to Raw was a ratings grab.
Of course.
And what really frustrates me is that the ratings were affected by his return. They were good ratings. Last week was good ratings, and this week were good ratings. His presence ignited the television ratings.
The crowd loved him when he came out at the top of the show. I mean, it was
a
huge pop.
And that bothers me, because here we have the ratings going up when I feel personally that the product is terrible.
Yeah, it is. No, I totally agree with you. It's just...
So, by having the ratings successful for the past 2 weeks, you know that the office guys at the WWE are thinking, oh, well, what we're pumping out is working.
Yeah.
And that's just a bad recipe for disaster.
It is. It's...
So would you like to see Vince McMahon on television from here on out? Or do you want him to just make that occasional appearance?
No, I want it to be sporadic and occasional, because that makes... That when he does come back to TV, it just makes it all that more special, you know?
But we both agree that if he is going to be showing up on television, he's got to take more of a serious approach.
Right? Yes. No, I really don't like his John Cena-esque. I guess that's the only way to describe
it. For sure.
Is his Cena-esque persona that he played on Raw 2 weeks ago. It was just...
How about the big announcement, or the big storyline, I could argue, on this past Monday Night's Raw? Triple H issuing a challenge to Brock Lesnar for SummerSlam.
Well, as bad as it sounds, I think that segment with him and Heyman, which we had a clip of at the top of the show, I think that was the best segment on Raw this past week.
And it's funny that it wasn't the last segment of Monday
Night
Raw.
You'd think they would end off Monday Night Raw with something like that, kind of with a cliffhanger, something to draw you back into the next week's episode.
But it doesn't matter how good of an angle it is. It doesn't matter who's in the segment. It doesn't matter how serious it is, how well the fans are responding to it. If John Cena is not involved, it is not the last segment on Monday Night Raw. This was proof of that theory this week, because I cannot believe that, you know, the whole John Cena attitude adjustment three times to John Laurinaitis, this was all supposed to happen the night before at No Way Out. Mm-hmm. That story was supposed to be finished at No Way Out. Everything that happens with Cena and Laurinaitis could have taken a back seat to promoting new storylines the night after the pay-per-view. We have Triple H Paul Heyman getting
totally
into an argument, promoting the neck, or, you know, the SummerSlam main event. That should be the end of Monday Night Raw.
I'm just, But
Cena's not involved.
All for ending Raw with like a cliffhanger or something to draw you back for the next week instead of Cena standing tall. It's just,
so it blows my mind that as good as this segment was involving Paul Heyman and Triple H, that it didn't finish the show off.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me personally.
Now, are you excited to see Brock Lesnar versus Triple H at SummerSlam?
Well, at this point, not really, because there's not really a coherent storyline attached to this. It's just, you know, Paul Heyman's threatened to sue him, and then he's going to come out, and he's challenged Brock Lesnar to a fight. Now, that's very, it's very ambiguous. Like, what's a fight? Is this going to be a wrestling match? Is this going to be, like, an MMA-style fight? Mm-hmm. Like,
I'm actually going to go the opposite route with you, and I'm going to say that I am a little excited for this match. Probably not for the same reasons most are, but I'm interested to see just who comes out on top in regards to Triple H and Brock Lesnar, because, you know, Brock Lesnar, he lost to John Cena. All momentum is lost.
Totally.
But then you have the guy who's taking over the WWE. Realistically, he should win against Brock Lesnar. But if he does win against Brock Lesnar, then you've killed Brock Lesnar's momentum even more as we head later into the road to WrestleMania.
And then, I mean, then he's got zero credibility. If he loses to Triple H at SummerSlam, he's just going to have zero credibility going forward.
So you can't have him lose. But then you can't really have Triple H, the man who took on Undertaker at WrestleMania and put on this classic match and went toe-to-toe with the Undertaker, really, all the way to the end. Then you're going to have him lose to Brock Lesnar. Maybe, possibly setting up Brock Lesnar versus Undertaker at WrestleMania. You just don't know. I mean, just to me, at this point, I would say Brock Lesnar is penciled in to win, but it would be very surprising to have Triple H lay down to Brock Lesnar.
Who do you personally want to see win this match?
I don't think anyone should ever beat Triple H because he is the man in charge. He is different than Vince McMahon when Vince McMahon's in charge. When Vince McMahon is in charge and he's in a wrestling match and he loses, he is still the winner. Because everyone knows Vince can't beat guys in the ring, right? He's putting guys over. He's willing to take the...
But that's a whole different animal then.
Yes. But what I'm saying is the whole allure to Triple H being in charge is that not only can he talk the talk, but he can back it up as well. And, you know, you don't mess with Triple H in the ring or outside the ring. Because if it's outside the ring, he'll take you inside the ring and smarten you up. Like, there's that intimidation factor of Triple H being able to back it up in the ring with his authoritative figure. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I totally
hear what you're
saying.
I don't think Triple H should lose at any point as long as he's in charge, personally.
Well, personally, I think that if Triple H does go over in this match, then WWE just flushed $5 million down the drain.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
No, yeah, I know.
The guy has zero credibility. If he comes in, he's only wrestled once, and he lost after taking two freaking moves.
Yeah.
And then if he comes in and he loses again, he's got no momentum going forward. You might as well just keep the guy off TV, because nobody's going to give a crap about him.
Yeah. Fair enough. Moving on. How about AJ this week on Monday Night Raw?
What is up with that?
Running
out with the... Well,
I agree.
Where are they going to go with this? I mean, you just had CM Punk win, you know, his match at No Way Out on Sunday. So, you know, doesn't that mean that she's firmly on CM Punk's side? Isn't that what logic would tell you?
You can argue that you just sat here and said 5 minutes ago that you like storylines that leave you with a cliffhanger. This is one that's got people confused for sure.
Yeah, it's got me confused, but it doesn't necessarily have me wanting to know what happens next. This just...
I don't like how she comes out and skips around. That just looked bad to me. I liked everything they've done up until that point, but to have her just come out wearing a Kane mask, skip around the ring and leave, that's not doing anything
for
me.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm totally against seeing somebody like CM Punk get like duped or played by a girl. You know, it totally takes away from the character that I feel he should be portraying based on what we saw last year.
Yeah.
You know, leading through, you know, last summer type thing.
That's over, though. That's gone.
It's such a shame. Right?
We're not talking about CM Punk, James. We're talking about AJ.
We're talking about the WWE title picture. That's what we're talking about. And CM Punk is definitely in that picture.
All right. So, AJ, though, are you, like, who is she with here? What do you think?
I don't know. You know what? It's like she's playing... It's like she's playing all hands on the table. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe she's with all of them.
Yeah. You know what? Personally, I think at the end of the day, we're going to see her be aligned with Daniel Bryan at the end of the day.
Maybe I think
this,
so as well.
Maybe this whole thing was just a ruse from the beginning, and she's been on Daniel Bryan's side the whole time.
Can't you pull that off within 24 hours? Do we have to drag that on for like 6 weeks? Like, if you are with Daniel Bryan, could you not come up with a plan to get the title back to him within 24 hours?
Then again, there you go. That plan, what I just described there, would smash the entire logic of the outcome of the match on Sunday, because why wouldn't have Daniel Bryan won if that was the case, right? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. And we'll probably be disappointed in
this. This is WWE logic.
Right, how about here? Dolph Ziggler? How are you feeling? Our weekly Dolph Ziggler chat.
Well, you know, I mean, we're seeing what kind of issues that WWE has with the depth of their roster right now. And I mean, I guess he's using it to his advantage at this point. So all he's got to do is just keep coming out and performing at a high level. And hopefully they realize that, yeah, this guy does belong in the main event picture and we can actually go somewhere with this guy. So yes, I am liking what I'm seeing with Dolph Ziggler here. I honestly thought that he was going to kind of maybe push Vicky Guerrero away on Monday, maybe do a face turn, but
yeah,
obviously we haven't seen that yet.
I'm sticking with my original theory that they're doing this all on purpose and they're going to force the crowd to align with him, and they're giving you an inch and
I gotta disagree with you, because I don't believe WWE creative does anything on purpose. I believe
what I think they're doing is working. They have the fans beginning to get behind Ziggler, and that's what you want. How about John Cena and the Big Show? Big Show losing to John Cena at No Way Out. Here you have a guy in a match who is supposed to... I mean, really, this is Big Show's first big match in a while, and you have him lose.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. Here I thought that we were going to see like a revival of Big Show's career, kind of like what Mark Henry did last year with his Hall of Pain, and they just squashed it in one match.
I think if he was facing anyone other than John Cena, you would have seen him win. This John Cena is killing it. I'm telling you. He's killing everything.
Jeez.
Get him out.
I think with the Big Show, I think we're going to see him maybe get into a program with Brodus Clay now, maybe heading into the future. What do you think about that?
I don't even care. Big Show lost.
Okay, there you go.
All momentum has been crushed by John Cena. Seriously. You don't take... Big Show already was questionable in the main event picture. You put him into a main event match at the pay-per-view, and then you have him lose. Why do I care about Big Show anymore? I don't.
Yeah.
No, they just squashed him one night.
I hear you on FM, man. Yeah, that's right there. That sound was a lot of people's feelings with the way WWE is writing things right now.
All right, let's finally wrap it up with Ryback. How do you feel about Ryback?
Ryback? I don't know, man. I'm still not sold on him. And you know what? I was thinking a lot about Ryback, actually. And I think the thing that really is the biggest difference between him and Goldberg is the entrance. Remember back, you know, Goldberg, the cameras used to follow him backstage as he made his way out to the ring. And then he'd stand at the ramp and he'd have the sparks rain down on him. And then he'd blow the smoke out his nostrils. Like, that was a really impressive entrance. And that really...
I have a feeling that we will see that.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
We're going to see a camera follow Ryback as from the backstage?
As we move up the rec, you know, as he moves up the win streak ladder, I bet you'll start to see that.
I personally, to me, that was like, because I thought about it, I go, you know, what am I not liking about Ryback? And I think it's just his entrance.
Is Ryback stale to you at this point or no?
It's starting to get a little bit stale. I mean, squashing all these jobbers.
It's going, what, 8 weeks now? 6 weeks?
So, and apparently the word is now they're going to start feeding him three guys at a time now. So let's see if he can do a Samoan drop with three guys on his shoulders.
Oh, I'm sure he can. I'm sure he can. I don't know. I'm not, I'm interested at this point still. I don't know where they're going to go with it, but I won't be very interested until they feed him someone of decent caliber, right?
So yeah.
Until that happens, we're going to just be
personally, I don't think we're going to see that for a while.
Interesting.
You know.
All right.
Last but not least, let's talk a little bit about TNA. Their product is starting to get a little bit better, and now they're doing another Bound for Glory series, which they did last year. And it's kind of interesting because it's kind of like a 180-degree reverse of what they did last year with Samoa Joe anyways. I don't know if you remember the Bound for Glory series last year.
Yep.
Samoa Joe, well, he got like 0 points, didn't get any wins or whatever. Now, he's like undefeated in this series, and he's got the most points out of anybody. So it's,
how far into it are they right now?
Oh, I think they're only a couple weeks into it.
What I watched the Slammiversary pay-per-view with TNA, and I have to admit,
it was good.
It was good. It was very good. And
their product is slowly getting better and better and better. And you know
what's better and what's really good about that is that the WWE's product is not looking that good.
No.
I think people are looking for somewhat of an alternative.
People are starting to notice TNA now, and I'm telling you, it's they're on the up. And WWE's WWE's on the down.
As long as WWE keeps doing what they're doing, TNA is going to be looking good. Coincidence, Vince Russo leaves TNA and the product gets better.
Zero coincidence whatsoever. Come on, man.
I know. But the point I want to make about TNA, though, is that as long as the WWE is pumping out this piss-poor product and TNA just sticks to what they're doing, you're going to see channels change.
I'm going to tell you right now, Corey, this is the biggest difference between WWE and TNA right now is that TNA knows how to make wins and losses mean something.
Yes.
And WWE is just crap happens.
Yeah,
you know, this happens and then
they still show obvious disregard to logical storyline writing. I have seen it many a times.
Oh, yeah.
And the history of TNA does not...
No, it's not in their favor, that's for sure.
Well, no, and you can't forget about the ridiculous history that goes with TNA. But you can start to change people's minds.
You can begin to erase that, though. Yeah, it's not a foregone conclusion that TNA is going to be bad or is not going to be good, you know what I mean?
It was very interesting times. So, I personally would love to see TNA rise up to where, not, you know, I mean, I don't think they'll ever get to where WCW was, but I would like to see them give the WWE a run for their money, only because I need to see a better product put out by the WWE. Maybe if a fire is lit underneath their ass, they'll be forced to rethink what they're doing.
They've got to have that competition that makes them on their toes.
Vince is taking it for granted what he has.
And that's the thing. And it's been that way for the last, you know, 10, 12 years now is, you know, WWE, they've been comfortable. You know, they haven't needed to be on their toes. They haven't had the need to put out cutting edge, I guess is what I'm trying to get at here. Yeah. So,
all right. Well, my blood is boiling. My doctor is standing right here telling me I need to calm it down. I can't talk any more wrestling this week. There is something that I do want to talk about, and James, you definitely would agree with me on this. There is a movie that is out. It was filmed in Vancouver. It's called Kayfabe the Movie.
Such a good movie.
Now, if you have never seen this movie, it is all about the behind-the-scenes inner workings of independent wrestling. That small-time stuff you see at Legion Halls and little facilities in small towns across the world. Anyways, this movie, Kayfabe, unbelievable. I think it's one of the funnier movies out there.
It's like take Trailer Park Boys and take any independent wrestling show and you mix them together in a bowl and you've got this Kayfabe movie. I mean... Mm-hmm. It's
a mockumentary style of movie, so it's supposed to be candid, and it's
it is low budget, but I'm telling you, the heart and soul of this movie is the characters that are in this movie. Just fantastic.
And one of the problems with this movie is that just not a lot of people know about it, and so we decided to get a hold of Mike Scully. Now, Mike Scully is one of the co-producers behind Kayfabe the Movie. He, alongside with Mike Raven and Pete Smith, who is a wrestler in Vancouver, he wrestles with ECCW and ASW. Those three came together, and they filmed this back in 2007. An outstanding movie, very comedic. We actually are going to be giving away a copy of this movie after our chat with Mike Scully. But you and I did have a chance to talk with Mike earlier today.
Really nice guy.
And the first question we asked him, just how did the three of you come up with the concept for Kayfabe the Movie?
Actually, the original idea, Mike Raven sort of thought of doing an outline for a film. We sort of talked about it at a few local wrestling shows. We were helping out Pete Smith Mike did some color commentary, and I just basically stood by the light switch at the gymnasium, flicking them on and off whenever I needed. And then just seeing the behind the scenes stuff, all the things in the locker room, and guys sort of ribbing each other, and things like, you know, crazy things that are going on and whatnot. It's just sort of, I kept saying, you know, this is just like a film, you know, kind of a best in show kind of thing, you know, and no one's ever really done this before. Mike wrote an initial outline, and then we bounced it back and forth, and then I wrote the first draft of the script and sort of bounced it back and forth, and then Pete had some input with the script and whatnot, and we just kept passing it around until we were, you know, finally happy with it.
Now, you've mentioned Mike Raven and Pete Smith. These are two other co-producers on the movie. What is your background, and what is your relationship with these two, and what is their background? Did you guys have a movie background before you went and filmed this project?
No, Mike and I have been friends since high school, and he met Pete when they were both articling at a law firm, believe it or not. He went in for his interview, and the interviewer said, "Hey, do you like wrestling? The last guy that in here is a wrestler." And the next thing you know, they sort of articled together one summer, and you know, we went to a couple of Pete's shows in Cloverdale, and he's always the heel character, so it's always fun to watch him. And you know, things kind of went from there, and then you know, go see more shows in town as you meet more of the people, and just see how the industry works, and you know. Yeah, we grew up wrestling fans too, right? But it's like, you know, it was fun to sort of be a part of it a little bit.
Now, Kayfabe the movie actually is about the behind-the-scenes aspect of professional wrestling. How do you describe the movie to people when they ask what it's about? What for someone who hasn't seen the movie yet, and I'm sure there are a lot of fans out there who haven't seen it or haven't been exposed to it. How do you describe this movie?
Well, the film's about the Tri-Cities International Championship Wrestling Federation, or the TCICWF for short. It's basically a really struggling promotion, the indie promotion that's sort of on its last legs, and everything's kind of going wrong, and they're just trying to stick together long enough for them to fold, try to get their last three shows together and go out with their heads held high kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And they encounter problems along the way, or is this...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which leads up to a very comedic movie. I mean, it's a brilliant idea. And the question I had for you, though, was when you were filming this movie and when you were thinking of this project, were you keeping the smart marks, I guess I would describe them as, in mind, or were you trying to reach out to everyone? Because there are a lot of jokes in this movie, and a lot of, not just jokes, but a lot of instances in this movie that really, I would say a more hardcore wrestling fan would be aware about, where maybe my dad, for example, wouldn't understand what's so funny about that moment. Do you know what I mean? Like, were you keeping, what kind of demographic were you keeping in mind when you were doing this project?
Well, I mean, we were trying to appeal to everyone, to be honest, but we did try to, like, layer the comedy and whatnot as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the casual fan could, you know, could see it, or even, like, we get a lot of compliments from people that really don't like wrestling, you know, and they're surprised how much they enjoyed the film. But then we've tried to put in a lot of things for the sort of the hardcore fans, little comments and, you know, lines and things that they would pick up on more than anyone else would, like a hardcore match with the potato, you know,
and
things of that nature.
What kind of reaction have you heard, first of all, from the non-wrestling fan? What are some of the comments you've received?
Well, I mean, they just find it like a funny film. It's sort of like, you know, it does have a lot of heart to it as well. I mean, these guys are struggling, you know, they're, you know, busting their asses for $20 a night at times, and, you know, just doing it to entertain the fans. So it's got a real human element to it. Like, a lot of them won't make it. They won't go on to any bigger events of things. This is about as good as it gets for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or the, you know, the odd guy may, you know, may make it to the show kind of thing. So I mean, you know, it's been quite positive.
What about the wrestling audience? I mean, just wrestlers themselves, the people that do work these indie circuits, how have they received this movie?
I think it's been received very well. It's you know, the odd time I'd hear someone say, you know, maybe exposes the business too much or whatnot, but it's pretty rare to hear something like that, because I think everyone's sort of in the know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always flattering. We got to actually Mick Foley to watch it. We send him a copy. And he said, well, at first he said, you know, he almost turned it off 10 minutes in, but he stuck with it as the characters grew on him. And then he found himself laughing out loud quite a few times throughout the film. And he listed the times that he liked.
That's got to make you feel good that Mick Foley is watching
the movie. Yeah, well, absolutely. I've got, you know, three of his books on my bookcase. So, You know, it's pretty flattering to have him watch something that we were able to make.
Now, you had told me a story before that Lance Storm did not feel the same way as Mick Foley did about the movie.
Well, he said him and his brother were going to watch it, and he sort of turned it off and left. He found that I think he believed it. Just paraphrasing, it was this film sort of represents everything that's wrong with the wrestling industry.
What?
But that's what we were. Well, I mean, an indie promotion kind of thing on its, cheaply run, sort of dysfunctional and whatnot. But that's sort of what we were going for, right? It's not that the big, it's not the WWE with people, going and flying on jets and limousines and whatnot.
So you knew this, though, heading into the project, but did you just kind of turn the blind eye? Because there would obviously be that criticism that you might be exposing far too much about professional wrestling at an independent level.
Well, I mean, there's so many books and things out there these days that, like Mick Foley's first book is probably my favorite one, Have a Nice Day, mm-hmm. where, my favorite part of it is when he was like a struggling wrestler, eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to survive and, sleeping in his car at times or whatnot, yeah. Just doing, you're cheering for him. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what we wanted to capture, the guys that are paying their dues, working the indie circuits, traveling town to town, mm-hmm. That kind of feel.
Fair enough.
Personally, I found the heart of this movie to be the characters that are in this film. I mean, they're just great. My question is, did you find that there was a lot of resistance getting guys to be involved in this project as performers?
No, not at all, actually. We found the opposite. We've got lots of people asked to be a part of it. And, a few people that weren't cast would call several times.
Oh, wow.
Seeing if there's any roles or whatnot. So we were really flattered with the reaction from, local actors and wrestlers.
The beautiful thing the beautiful thing about doing a movie about professional wrestling is character development really is as easy as it gets.
Yeah.
Because characters in wrestling are what makes the whole industry work. And you guys came up with a variety of characters in this movie. Guys like Randy Tyler, Casa Supernova, Al Thompson, Cam Cunningham, Tomahawk Jacques.
Oh, hilarious.
Mark O'Kane, Steve Justice. I mean, at some point when you were writing this script, you must have had to cut a few characters from this movie. Was there any characters that you wanted to put in the movie but you just couldn't fit in for whatever reason, or were these the list that you had from the get-go?
We had a little bit of a shorter list. We actually had to add a couple characters just to round out the roster a little bit. Just because originally we had like six wrestlers, and I'm going, well, that's gonna be a terrible promotion if it's the same six guys every show. So we added a few more just to sort of flesh it out and give it more of an indie feel to it, like an actual indie promotion.
Now I'm just going to quickly, for the people who haven't seen this movie yet, I'm just going to ask you a couple, just give us a bit a quick character synopsis on a couple of these guys, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The Rocket Randy Tyler, he is one of the main characters in this movie. How would you describe him?
Well, I mean, he's the protagonist behind the scenes. He's, mm-hmm. he's sort of the good guy. He's the Rock. He's trying to keep everything together and keep it going smoothly while people aren't showing up and whatnot. But to the audience of the wrestling, the promotion, he's their top heel. He's always yelling at the fans and cheating and doing everything he can to win. Any underhanded tactic is fair game for him.
How about Robert LaFontaine, better known as Casa Supernova?
Well, he's a new guy that's joined their little federation for the last few shows, but they're not quite sure about him. He's somewhat of a metrosexual, chiseled physique, tanned, oiled up, very, very friendly to everyone, but, they're not quite sure about him. But he really shines in the ring when he gets his chance.
How about Al Thompson?
My personal favorite.
Al Thompson. Al Thompson was a lot of fun to write. He was the grizzled ex-wrestler turned promoter, swears like a sailor, drinks and smokes, and... He was just fun to have him around.
And he does actually have one final match before they.
I think he wrestled that final match with a cigarette in his hand, didn't he?
when he came out, he had a cigarette going and a few beers of the six pack left in the ring.
Now, these are all wrestlers. Well, not all of them, but a majority of the talent in this movie is from the local wrestling promotion, ECCW, and that's great for them. And this is a Vancouver-made movie. It was started in around 2006, 2007, you had mentioned. I think you shot in the summer of 2007. What was that time like, and what was it? What was the feeling on set when you guys were shooting this movie?
Well, it was pretty stressful. We shot the whole thing in 10 days. We did 9 days straight, and then we did then one more day of pickups for interviews and whatnot. So it was they're long days, but everyone really chipped in, and everyone really bought into the project. It was really impressive how it all came together.
Was it a high budget film in any way, or was it extremely low budget?
Mike Raven uses the term shoestring budget.
Yes.
Even lower than low. But it was a lot of fun to make, so it was, you know.
Were there many, like, logistical difficulties with locations and sets and whatnot?
Yeah, there was a few. The Buffalo Club that we used as the TCICWF watering hole, when we got there to shoot, there was a giant skate ramp in the middle of the bar that aware of.
Which
we shot there on a Tuesday, and then we looked at the sign of the door, and it was boarding Monday, so I guess they did a big giant skate thing on the Monday, so we had to shoot everything by specific angles so you wouldn't see the giant skate right now. You know, that was a little bit of a monkey wrench that, into place.
What is it like, wrestling does have a bit of a negative connotation to it. There is this stigma attached with the word wrestling that is misconceived by the rest of the world. What was it like trying to attempt to create this project, knowing that you are making a movie about wrestling and you're trying to get locations and grab actors? And, was it difficult? Does that word wrestling hurt the production of this movie?
I don't think so. I mean, we shot all the wrestling on 2 days. So it's those were long days, but apart from those 2 days that we did all the shooting, everyone, it was just a regular movie for everyone else, kind of thing.
Interesting. Well, that's good to hear. We're 5 years later after you've released this movie. When you first released this movie, what was the original goal or the dream? You could even argue, what was in your head? Where did you think this movie was gonna go? And, where it is now, like, how have those two contrasted?
Well, I mean, originally you just kind of shoot for the stars kind of thing.
Of course, we had
festivals, and we did quite well. We won a few festivals. We won the Best Comedy and Best Mockumentary at the Lake Dance Film Festival, and Audience Choice Award at the Eugene International Film Festival, and the Best Canadian Independent Feature at the Okanagan Film Festival.
Before you go on there, let me just ask you about those film festivals. Describe that experience. Like, when you are in the theater with these viewers watching that movie, how did that make you feel?
It was surprising, really. I mean, how the people really took to the film. It was very, very flattering. It's just, nice to see the recognition.
Are you sitting in a theater just watching these people laugh? Is that really how it goes down?
Pretty much. You just sort of like to sit in the back. I mean, at this point, we've all seen the film about 100 times each.
we can
recite it verbatim. But it's just at this point, you're just sort of watching the audience and seeing what they laugh at and what they don't get and, whatnot.
So
what goes over and what doesn't.
So you've done well at a couple film festivals. Continue on there with the original thought about, what was the original goal and where are you at now?
Well, we did, after the film festivals, we were on Super Channel for 18 months, so we did get a lot of play on there, and then we were trying to spin it off into a TV series, and we pitched it to a few networks, and got some reaction, but it ultimately didn't come together, and so that's sort of where we sit now, just maybe hoping for another broadcast deal to maybe make a little bit of a profit would be nicer,
Yeah. Well, this is my thought is, and I told you this before, I was surprised that you guys went the movie route, because when I first saw this movie back in, I think it was 2008 or 2009, I can't quite remember, But I remember thinking to myself, this was at a time when the movie or the TV show The Office was just getting going. Trailer Park Boys was launching as well, and this mockumentary style of TV show had just really taken off. Mm-hmm. And I was actually a little surprised that you guys didn't go the TV show route as opposed to going the movie route, which you did go. Is there any thoughts or is there any chance that this could become a spin-off TV show where you would have episodic series?
Well, I mean, it would be fantastic if that were to happen. We just sort of thought, if we could shoot the film, we could, you know, maybe use it as a TV pilot as well if we cut it or whatnot, you know. But
and have you approached TV networks about this?
Oh yeah, we pitched it to a number of networks, and we actually had a gentleman helping us in LA pitching it to a few networks as well. And they seemed to like the concept, but it just didn't quite come together.
What's the reaction been when you, like, what kind of comments do you hear from these TV networks?
Well, I mean, they like the originality. They like the quality of the film and the comedy. But you know, one of them was CBC. We didn't really think CBC would be totally right for the project. But I found out at a certain time they were looking for Canadian content. So I figured, well, why not? Why not contact them and see what happens? Mm-hmm. And they got them to watch the film and whatnot, but ultimately it's you know, probably not a CBC kind of project, but yeah, I guess it's very, very kind words and very nice supportive things.
How about comedy networks? Have you ever attempted comedy networks?
Yeah, the Comedy Central in the States had a bit of interest. They wanted their own showrunner and their own writer, which that was fine by us. I mean, we just wanted to do anything to get the project going. But ultimately, the showrunners didn't care for the project as much as the vice president of original programming did.
That really shocks me, because
I was just gonna say,
personally, I think this film is a great premise for a television show that could be on like Comedy Central or something.
I just I personally wonder if there is that disconnect from a wrestling fan and a non-wrestling fan, and you know, just the non-wrestling fan may not get some of the jokes in the movie, because to me, some of the jokes,
I personally don't think
so. You don't think so? Because I find the stuff that I laughed at the most about this movie were the most inside of jokes within the wrestling industry.
Like, can you give a quick example? You know, actually, you know what, I can kind of see where you're coming from, because the stuff I laugh the most at, yeah, you like, probably have to be a little bit more of a wrestling fan. Like Al Thompson no-selling the two maneuvers for
exactly,
the rookie.
Yeah.
I mean, I laughed my bag off when
he
went for the slingshot into the corner and just lied there. Didn't sell it whatsoever. That was
that's actually based on a true story where Rocky Randy Tyler wrestled someone on the road that he'd never wrestled before. And he said to the guy, you know how to do a slingshot? No problem. And the guy didn't know how to do a slingshot. So Pete found himself just laying in the ring. So he hopped up and just started kicking him, just like Al Thompson does in the film. A little homage to a road trip.
Oh, that's
and that's
awesome.
The thing about this movie is that you can feel that there are those real-life stories written into the script, probably from Pete himself. And I get that, but I'm just wondering if maybe the non-wrestling fan really understands that. And that's possibly a reason why this movie is not bigger than it is, because I feel like it is a outstanding film, very comedic, and it explains independent wrestling at a backstage level to a T.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will give it the ultimate litmus test. I'm going to bring my mother over and I will play it for her and I'll see what she thinks, because if there's somebody who's you know, we'll see what she thinks. So that'll be the big litmus test.
Now, Mike, you know, we've kind of we're kind of at a stagnant time with this movie. You're not getting picked up with any TV networks. The movie, I'm assuming, isn't generating as much of a profit as you'd like. What is the plan today? Kayfabe Entertainment still exists. It's still a company. The website is still up on the internet. Are there plans for other projects, or are we going to continue trying to market this project? What is the future for Kayfabe Entertainment?
Well, I mean, we still sell the odd DVD, and it's always kind of flattering, because they seem to sell like all over the world, like Texas or, you know, like Finland or wherever, Japan. You know, they keep getting shipped out everywhere. I would think that kayfabe's probably run its course. I'd be happily surprised if that weren't true, but I think it has. Hmm. So just sort of writing some other scripts and things as well, trying to you know, look at some different other industries and whatnot. I'm just finishing up a steakhouse mockumentary that was actually the very first script I tried to write. I didn't really know what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to rework it and make it a much more logical plot. And, you know, shoehorn in a lot more comedy, just try to make it the layered version like Kayfabe did and go from there.
I got to admit, Mike, I'm a little disappointed. I really thought you guys had something here, and I really wanted you to... I would love for you guys to stick with this project and keep going. That being said, it's easy for me to say. I mean,
what's the possibility of a Kayfabe sequel?
Not good, apparently, Mike Scully.
Well, we talked about that a little bit, but... you know, we never really get the plot together. We did write the 13-episode outline for the series, which would have taken place a year or two later, where they decided to get the business going again and open our little wrestling school to try to, you know, train some new talent and have a big comeback show at the end, which I thought was quite funny. But we'll see if anything happens then.
Interesting. Okay, well, we are going to be giving a copy of the movie, Kayfabe the Movie, to one of our lucky listeners. So thank you very much for that tonight, by the way, Mike.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And is there anything else you want to talk about before we let you go here?
Thank you so much for watching the film. And if any of the listeners want to, you know, look at the trailers or read in the reviews or order a copy, it's www.kayfabemovie.com, K-A-Y-F-A-B-E, movie.com. And it's all on there.
All right. Mike Scully from Kayfabe Entertainment. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. And outstanding movie from both James and I's
opinions. I highly recommend it to anybody, wrestling and non-wrestling fan alike.
I am absolutely shocked that this movie is not in Hollywood. Let's just put it that way.
I'm shocked it's not a TV show.
All right, Mike. Take care, man. Thanks a lot.
All the best to you. Thank you.
There you go, James. Mike Scully from Kayfabe the Movie. Excellent movie, man. Oh. I totally recommend this to anyone who appreciates and loves wrestling and is just looking for a good laugh.
And you know what? We're going to be actually giving away a copy of this wonderful movie. All you got to do really is just, you know, send us your thoughts on professional wrestling in general. What do you like? What don't you like? You know, tell us what you thought of Raw. Tell us what you thought of SmackDown. Hell, tell us what you thought about TNA. All you got to do, send us an email on air at smacktalkradiolive.com. Now, you've got until next Wednesday to get those into us, and then we'll be picking a winner next week on our Thursday show. So
We will announce the winner.
It
next
really
Thursday.
Does not get any easier than that.
I mean, what, you can't send us your quick thought about what you think of wrestling?
All you got to do is hit the send button, and you could have a great movie coming your way.
Really is a good one. Thanks a lot to Mike Scully for coming on the show and just filling us in. I really hope the best. I mean, Mike seems pretty down and out about the project, and he doesn't think it's going anywhere. I think the time has passed.
I think just more people need to hear about it and get their eyeballs on it, and they'll realize what a great project this actually was. And it really does showcase just how good of performers some of the local guys here in town really are.
Hopefully tonight's show will change that. Now, we will be back next Thursday for Smack Talk Radio Live, and that's because we're pulling the plug on SRL on a Monday night. Temporarily, that is.
Yeah, it's just to make things easier for us, you know?
www.smacktalkradiolive.com, facebook.com/smacktalkradio. If you know anyone that is into professional wrestling, throw them over to that Facebook page, and our weekly updates will help them get excited about the show and have them check it out. We need help in that department promoting our show. So if you know anyone who likes that, send them our way. And Thursday, next week,
another big show.
I'm Corey Callahan.
And I am James McDonald.
See ya next week. You're not me.